you know there's more to this world than what you're told. Paranormal phenomenon, supernatural forces, government conspiracies, alien visitors. Step out of the world you see, open up your mind, and get ready for another round of strange at the Supernatural Radio Show with Corrine DeWinter and Nino Del Padre. Brought to you by PurplePlates.com for harmony, healing, and living energy products for a greater quality of life. Listen up, world. Here's Corrine and Nino.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Supernatural Radio Show. It is, we are in Massachusetts here, and it's a bit chilly today and very windy, perfect for ghost stories. And I was delighted to actually come across a book called The Paranormal Reader by author Gail Godfrey, and she was kind enough actually to send me a copy so I could review it and look at it, at what she had to say about her paranormal experiences and interviews with various, spectators of the ghostly realms and all kinds of things. A paranormal reader is True Encounters of Medium Ghost Consciousness and Science. And Gail does a fantastic job of explaining many things from, there's so many things in this book, just a wealth of information, contacting the dead, mediums, remote viewing, mystic visions, near-death experiences, out-of-body travelers, negative entities, spirit rescuers, animal communicators, higher selves, orbs, angels, shadow men, and many other subjects included in here. Gail Godfrey, our guest tonight, lives in New Jersey near old battlefields, historic places, and footpaths of the dead. As a child, her parents taught her to see the world beyond, and today she loves nothing more than to gather tales of the true but unexplained. And I would urge anyone to go get this book. It is available from Merweed Press, which I put a notice in the chat room, and that is spelled MERWEDEPRESS.com. And you will be highly amused and entertained by reading this. And it's just, like I said, a wealth of information. So we are going to welcome Gail, and we'll begin discussing all the ghostly, or most of the, or some of the ghostly experiences she's had. And Gail, are you with us?
Yeah, Corrine, I'm here. How are you? Good evening.
I'm okay. Good evening to you. And I know you're just up the road in New Jersey, and it's a little chilly there probably still, too.
Actually, spring has sprung here. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's like cold here. It's very cold today and windy, but like I said, it's a good weather for ghost stories. Any weather is good for ghost stories.
It is.
So
our favorite.
When I was reading your book, I finished reading it last week, and there was one story, Gail, that just really caught my attention. I mean, all of them are fantastic, and it was so easy to read. The story of you meeting this woman on a park bench, and can you begin by telling us what happened?
Yeah, it's funny, Corrine. That is one of my most impactful stories from my point of view also. She is a lovely young woman in her mid-30s, and I had put the word out that I was writing a book and wanted stories of everybody's quote-unquote paranormal experiences without defining what they were. They came to me with whatever subject fell into place in different categories. This young woman said, I've been having out-of-body experiences, and that's how it started. I thought that her story was purely one of astral projection, and as you read, it morphed. It became more and more layered and nuanced, and So let me start with that one. About 2 years ago, I sat down with her and she lives in Garfield, New Jersey, which is an industrial town, but her neighborhood is a lovely little pocket and as neat as a pin. And she said, you know, I've been having out-of-body experiences since I was in high school. She said, I played the drum in high school, and that which may have be significant, the musicality, the beat. But she said, the first time it happened, I came home on a Saturday afternoon. I was tired. I laid down. And all of a sudden, I saw an arm floating about above my arm. It was dark. It had a black shadow around it. And it had a purple core, and it was a perfect replica of my arm floating above my flesh and blood arm. And I said, well, how long did it last? And she said, not long at all, only about 15 seconds. And I said, well, what about the true out-of-body experiences? And she said, well, that happened periodically as a teenager, and it happens all the time now. She's, as I said, in her mid-30s. And I asked her to describe it, and she said, well, her consciousness will just pop up out of her body. Normally when she's resting, she's either falling asleep or taking a nap, or trying to take a nap, and at that time it was scaring the living daylights out of her. And after it had been happening to her for 20 years and she still couldn't handle it, and she said, I'm afraid to sleep, and I fight off sleep, I fight off this happening. And I said, I recommended to her that she read Robert Munro's books. And Corinne, you're familiar with them, aren't
you? Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the granddaddy of out-of-body experiences. He was a Virginia engineer who was experimenting with sound and found the same thing happening to him. He would lay down on the sofa after hearing the sounds and recordings of the sounds, and his consciousness would pop out of his body. Well, I recommended to her those books. I recommended a number of books, and she did say she was going to read them. I thought that the story had ended right there with our first interview. And about a month later, she called me, and she was absolutely beside herself. She was so upset. She was having spontaneous OBEs.
Oh, Lord.
Through the day.
Right. And when Gail, when I was reading this, I said, you know, because the way Gail writes the book, it's like it's almost like she's sitting there and you're having a conversation with her and she's telling you these. It's so personal and just so warm, so delightful to read. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm talking to you as I'm reading the book, I'm talking to you, and I'm like, oh, my God, what are you going to do? Because it was just so freaky. I mean, I wouldn't know. But I also want to mention, Gail, that reading the book, you know, you kind of shy away from this, but you also have some psychic abilities yourself. And would you agree to that? Because it seems like a lot of the stories involve your feelings or premonitions or clairaudience.
My whole life I have, and my father did too. And it's funny, not until the last 5 years have I really talked about it very much, because I think it's becoming far more accepted and acceptable. But when I was 10 or 11, it started by seeing, as I call them, solid as you and I, dead people. And it didn't mm-hmm. happen often, but it happened. And then as I got to be a teenager, I started to feel them. And it didn't happen as often during until I was in my late 40s. And then it started happening more and more again. But what happens to me is that I will walk into a spirit's emotions. In other words, some people will see a spirit. Some people will sense them. I'll just walk into like a telephone booth's worth of emotions, whether that spirit is feeling angry or confused or disoriented. I will feel that. I will feel what the spirit is feeling. And I'm never prepared. It always takes me off guard. And I say, what is this? But I know what it is immediately.
Right. Well, that's a little discomforting, I'd say.
Well, it's informative, and I certainly know, and then I say to myself, okay, I have a story brewing, and they eventually ended up in my book, as you noticed.
Right. And I just want to interject one thing here, Gail. We have actually a woman on the phone right now. Her name is Karen Kay, and she joins me often to co-host the show, and she called in just a couple of minutes ago. So I'm going to bring her on because she also has some questions for you. So we're just going to bring her on. And then, then we'll continue with the story of the strange woman who kept floating out of her body. Okay, Karen, are you there? Hi,
I'm
Karen.
I'm here. Hi.
And meet
Hi,
Gail.
Karen.
Hi,
Karen,
Gail. Can you hear? Hi, Karen. I can hear you.
Okay, good. You've been listening, Karen, to the story that Gail is relating about the woman who kept having, you know, instantaneous out-of-body experiences. So I'm sorry to interrupt that. It's very interesting, though. So then what happened, Gail?
Well, she related to me the fact that her mother had these OBEs as a child, and that she fought them off, although at the time that she and I talked, she was still having trouble getting to sleep at night. So again, I thought that the story had ended, and she called me, and she said, I'm very upset. It's happening all the time. Well, it turned out that they were being spurred on by an emotional issue that she was having. And this is the way her consciousness was reacting to her emotional crisis. So there wasn't a lot that I could do for her other than to try and steer her towards some books I wanted her to read. And she said, oh, I'll read them, and that was it. Well, she called then a couple of months later, and she said, and the plot thickened, and she said, I'm being stalked by a spirit who I can see. He's not solid. He's translucent, but I can see that he's an older man. He's scraggly. He has a work shirt, and he keeps repeating over and over, watch out for the orange dog. Watch out. And he's hiding in my home. He won't leave me alone. And I said, well, Laura, try to get rid of him, bringing through all of the spirit rescue literature that I had read, although I've never had the talent for spirit rescue. We all study it as academically. So I suggested to Laura that she try and cajole him away. She tried to banish him. She tried saying the Lord's Prayer. I just went down a laundry list of of possible mechanisms, and none of them worked. And I said, is he still there? Yep, he's still here. Well, we hung up, and she called back the next month. And you might think that she was bothering me, and she's not. She's a sweetheart, and I was happy to help her, and honored that she was turning to me for help. And I asked her if she'd read some of the books I had sent her, and she really wasn't reading them as I would want her to. But to make a long story short, the one man seemed to multiply into a collection of lost souls that were now stalking her. And you remember reading that, Corrine?
Of course, yes.
And she was, at that point, she was really freaked out. And she said, they're begging me for help. And what was interesting is they were attracted to her. They knew that she could see them. And they were, I suppose, they were lost souls in the gray land. They either didn't know they were dead. They didn't know where they were. And she said, I don't know how to help them. So, again, I said, look, you need more help than I can give you. And I suggested spiritual counselors, shamanic healers, and people who specialize in spirit rescue. What happened was I eventually said, look, why don't I take you down to see Terry Rodabell? She's a very talented medium who lives in Frederick, Maryland, who comes up to Gettysburg. And Terry has seen the dead all of her life, and she knows how to deal with it. And I thought she could coach Laura. Well, this is where she started acting very strangely. She would, her usual personality seemed to be subjugated by another person who would break the appointment. In other words, I made an appointment to see Terry in Gettysburg with Laura on a Sunday, and Laura would either not confirm, or she would call with a very strange voice and say, I can't go. And we went back and forth, and finally she said, I can't go, the Saturday night before. And I thought, okay, this was for your benefit, but you can't. So I went down to Gettysburg to see Terry anyway, because I didn't want to stand her up. And I walked in, and Terry said, I knew she wouldn't come. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And she said, I can see them. And I said, you can see who? And she said, she has three entities attached to her. She said, actually, they're embedded within her, so it's more like a possession. And I had never had any familiarity with that, and that was new to me. And she said, she really is in a bad place. She'll need a shamanic healer. She'll need an exorcism. And so I emailed Laura the next day and told her. I wanted to convey it by email to get in all of the details. And I wasn't sure how she would take it. But she was very grateful for the information. And she ended up standing in front of the mirror and actually banishing them. I guess that's the way you could summarize it. And I stay in touch with her, and somehow her own home remedy of yelling them out worked for her, and she has her feet on the ground again.
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, I said, because, reading that she was basically possessed with a bunch of different spirits, I said, how is this girl going to come out of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But she did, and it's really amazing. So you met many mediums. You mentioned, many mediums and psychics that you've come across. And I'm just wondering, I mean, I have probably spoken to, I don't know, maybe 100. I've gotten reading after reading, you know. So do you think that the, you know, I mean, Gail, how how many real talented mediums do you think are out there? I mean, they're not very abundant, are they?
Well, yes and no. There are people I call novices. And do you remember the chapter about the James von Prague workshop at the Omega Institute, where he was coaching mediums? And basically, James von Prague was very, I don't want to use the word tough, he's a lovely human being, but serious in his communication and in his admonition to do not go out there unless you're ready. He said, I spent 10 years in psychic development, 10 years before I did my first professional reading. I think that people go out there before they're ready. And that's fine if it's a spiritualist church and they're at the podium practicing and they're not charging more than goes into the collection plate. But when people charge $200 and $300, they really do need to have their skills honed. And what I see happening is there are skilled mediums. They're wonderful mediums, but I think many of them overschedule themselves, and they tire themselves. And it's an art. It's not a science. And the readings that I included in the book are the ones that were so remarkable, to the extent that I find their results so almost quantifiable, that what they came through with is proof of the talent of mediumship and proof that life exists on the other side, which I know and you know and all of your listeners know, but not everybody knows, and that's or believes, and that is the greater purpose of my book, is to convince the uninitiated. But by the same token, I've seen really excellent mediums just pandering for time, trying to bide time and filling in a reading with inanities like your grandmother sends you flowers.
Right.
Filler. And that's a waste of everybody's time, and it's a shame when it's on somebody's dime. But by the same token, they will also come through with wonderful nuggets. So I always do try to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm very supportive of the discipline.
Right, right. And once again, listeners, we are talking to Gail Godfrey, and she is the author of A Paranormal Reader. It's a brand new book. It's fantastic. It's True Encounters with Mediums, Ghosts, Consciousness, and Science. And it is available through Merweed. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Gail? Merweed?
Mm-hmm. It's an old family name from the 16th century, from my mother's side of the family, and I thought it was odd. So I used it.
It's a cool word, though. I mean, what does it mean?
It's a last name. It's a family name from Holland. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it is Merweed, MerweedePress.com, and that's where you can get A Paranormal Reader. And it's just such a great read. And Gail has been pleasant enough to, and I can't talk.
You're tired from last night.
We welcomed her, and she's like kind enough to come on and talk about this. Now, there's some scary stuff in this book, Gail. The passage, "Something Wicked This Way Comes."
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Well, that was my only interview with, I was calling him a ghost hunter, and he said, no, I'm a paranormal investigator. And he's based in on Staten Island in New York, and I have such respect for these people because I can't do what they do because I feel too much. I mean, I have to turn it off. So they very intrepidly go into these profoundly haunted structures with they prefer to use their devices that we're all familiar with, but many of them augment their technical readings by bringing a medium along. So this young fellow told me about his visit to his two visits to Seaview Hospital. Seaview Hospital is I don't know if it was both a mental institution and a tubercular facility, but it's closed now, like many of those state hospitals are. And we drove by it, and it's appropriately scary looking, Corrine. But said that he went in with the first medium. The first medium said, "I perceive a man in white. I see two children. The children are afraid of him." And that's pretty much all he got from that medium in that visit. The second time he went in with a separate medium who had not advised of the first trip, and she knew nothing of the first medium's results. She immediately said the same thing. "I see a man in a white uniform. I see two children who are pulling me toward their safe room where he can't abuse them." Mm-hmm. And later they started walking through this dark hospital, and they felt little rocks being thrown at them from the darkness. And they kept on touring, but the little rocks started getting bigger and bigger. And the group took a walk up a flight of stairs, and he noticed a cinder block that was teetering on the edge of the stairs on the way up. On the way down, he noticed the same cinder block in the same spot. When the last person got to the very bottom of the stairwell, the cinder block came crashing down. And nobody who was alive was up there, and the medium immediately turned around and said, "We have to get out of here. An entity that is strong enough to move a cinder block is strong enough to do great harm, great bodily harm to us."
Okay.
And that was that.
Yeah, I would have fled the scene, because I mean, we hear about these entities that can be harmful, but Gail, I never really, I mean, has there ever been a case that you know of where someone has, been like smashed or, killed by an entity?
I cannot say that I have evidence no one has reported a case like that to me, but my sense is that it can happen, and it's not necessarily departed humans. I sincerely believe that there are lower order entities who do have the power to cause physical manifestations, whether it be a movement or harm, and in the case of Laura, an attachment. So you do need to go into these situations with a protective prayer. But again, I don't go on paranormal investigations. I just don't have the wherewithal for it.
Okay, because we have a question in the chat room. They're asking, how do you protect yourself when you go into these situations?
Well, I can give you my recipe, and this is my, and it works like a charm for me. I will pull up the energy from the magma from the core of the earth into my own core. And I will fill my being with very bright light, and I will push that light out of me in jagged edges like a star all around me. And I will put a shield of chrome around me. And that's what I had to do at the Saratoga battlefield when I accidentally happened into what I call a nest of spirits. And I got away from them, and then at the bottom of the hill, I looked up and I said, I have to walk through them again to get out of here, and that's what I did. And sure enough, they were about a foot away. So that's my recipe.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because I know, like, you know, different things work for different people, but I've gone on investigations, but. I guess, you know, if I don't have to put myself in that position, then I don't want
yes,
to.
Yes, I'm with you. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Gail. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I just think that there are two schools. I do know that many people who are highly empathic and highly sensitive do condition themselves to be able to control their emotions and go on these paranormal investigations. But like you, Corrine, I'm too sensitive, and I prefer to stay back, where I have a cousin who, she dragged me out to the wheat field. She lives in Gettysburg, and in the middle of the night, on the blackest night you've ever seen, and she said, I was having a little bit of a hard time, although I completely controlled myself. And she said, I can't feel a thing. And she's the perfect investigator, because she can't feel anything, and she can intellectualize and analyze. And so I think people are cut from different cloths.
Yeah, definitely. We have intuitive consultant in the chat room, and she has said, would prefer to do clearings and crossings rather than ghost hunts. And that actually, see, in my opinion, that's even, that's just as dicey.
I strongly agree with that. And in my book, I say that exactly that. There aren't enough people with that attitude. In England, spirit rescue is a greater part of the culture, I think, because it's an older culture. Where here, ghosts are tourist attractions, and I so agree with that. I mean, just from a humanitarian standpoint, help these poor people cross, and it's not an easy thing to do. So, and a specialty unto itself.
Right, and Gail, I don't know if you've ever. I read this book by William Macy. And he talks about the rescuers on the other side that come, you know, go to the lower levels and rescue people that are kind of stuck in between in that, like, well, he terms it the dismal realm. And it's sort of like a dingy area right above the earth plane. But he talks about that these people have to lower their vibration to go, you know, the spirits have to lower their vibrations to come into that realm, come down to that realm. So that I think that when the spirits are stuck in that middle ground area, that like what happened with Laura, she had one entity, and then it turned into a crowd, because I do think that they gather together. So that's why I think that when we're trying to get messages from the dead and they come down, they lower their vibration in order to give us messages, perhaps, that you're really risking getting a bunch of other entities that see what's going on that maybe are troublemakers and, you know, want to kind of edge in on what's happening. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you have those who are stuck in the gray zone. And let's say you're talking to your parents who've departed. I know my parents. Maybe they'll come in, they'll say hello, but they're out of there. They're not in the gray zone, and they have no desire to stay there. But yes, I think that we emanate light. They see our light, and those who can see them. They're frantic for acknowledgement. They're confused. But I haven't read William Macy's book. I must do that. I did, however, interview a woman who does spirit rescue work, and I'll give you some of her insights. She goes into what I like to call a theta state, which is, beta is one where you and I are in beta right now. Our consciousness is in the moment. We're completely aware. Alpha was when you were sitting in math class in high school. You're neither here nor there. And theta is that state that we are in when we put ourselves in a meditative place or when we're just about to sleep. She gets herself into a theta state and accesses spirit that way. And according to Gwen, I called her Gwen because she prefers anonymity, she said that in her experience, the guides on the other side will come and get her, but she feels that humans, that we are in a better position to help spirits cross than anyone from the other side coming in. I guess there are different schools of thought. And she does it in different ways. She can access their consciousness telepathically, but she always has to cajole and trick them somehow and convince them to go over. 9 times out of 10, they don't know that they're dead.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. And Karen has, she's not with us anymore on the phone. She's in the chat room, and she's saying a lot of rescuers have the Persephone line on the hand. It forks off of the lifeline. And those are supposed to be. Isn't it very interesting? Yeah, I've got to look that up more. Actually, if you look at your own palm, if the lifeline, which palm, Karen? Is it the left palm or the right palm? I'm not sure.
That's good information,
isn't it?
But it is a specialty. It's you have to be just in the right place spiritually and mentally. And I don't know if it's something that can be taught or if it's a talent that is innate that someone is born with.
Right. Well, it makes me think if it's on your palm, the Persephone
yes.
line, that you're born with it. But like you said, you want to be very solid and stable and grounded when you do any kind of this work, So what, besides that incident that we just talked about where the stones were being thrown and the cinder block was, in play. What other scary?
Well, my father, when he was a little boy, he used to, I took all of these stories for granted as I was growing up, and I found out later that other people's parents didn't tell them these stories. But for example, he grew up. He is from Sicily, from Italy, and he grew up in a very ancient mountain village that was terribly remote. And on top of it was the town wound around a mountain, and on top was a decaying castle that had been built by the Saracens. I believe they would have been building in the 11th century. And it was later occupied by the Normans. Well, under the castle was a labyrinth of tunnels, I guess ostensibly in case there was a siege. And the tunnels are sealed now. The town has sealed the tunnels. But when my father was growing up, the boys used to like to go into the tunnels with a kerosene lamp. And like a pack of three or four boys would go into these catacombs under the castle. He said that what they were looking for was the light. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, we would turn down the lamp, and way off in the distance of the tunnel, you could see a light. It was a round, glowing ball of light. And we would walk toward it. We would try to catch it. But as soon as we got to the spot where the light had been, the light had moved on further and further into the darkness, further into the tunnels, as though it were beckoning these boys to follow it into the darkness of the tunnels, which, of course, was very dangerous. I thought that was a little scary.
Yeah, I mean, so did they follow the light further, or did they just say, forget it?
They always said, forget it. I mean, they went as far as they could, and then, you know, it's a miracle that they made their way out, because the tunnels branched. But I don't know if they ever lost any boys.
Right, right. And Karen Kay was on the Queen Mary. Talk about scary. She had a wicked incident, and I wish she could explain it to us on the phone, but the phone, it's just not possible right now. But she was basically, they went on a ghost tour after the show that she was part of, and there was a photographer taking lots of pictures, and when they looked at the pictures later, they noticed that there was a large cloud of white on Karen, but no one else in the pictures. So
I wonder if that's complimentary. the person liked her. She maybe has a good light to her.
That's what I thought too. I'm like, well, it must have been attracted to her because, you know, it felt like a kinship. However, she didn't feel lucky to have this thing. She actually lost a lot of energy suddenly. She just didn't feel right. Yeah.
Okay.
So they ended up doing what she jokingly called an exorcism. And Karen, I wish that you were on the line. And she's saying in the chat room, it was also in the pool and other haunted areas, that white, misty look.
Did she sense it was the same deceased individual, or it was just a common visual on the Queen Mary?
Well, there were so many spirits, according to the mediums that were with her. But she says the psychic took the photos and no one else came out with the white orbs. So she had a heavy, creepy feeling when it happened. She didn't even know about the pictures before she started feeling this way. She just didn't know why she was feeling this way all of a sudden. But they did this exorcism. I don't know. I wish she could explain it to you. These women that were there.
Well,
they
it's so important to have people who are there who are aware of this. She herself and everyone around is aware that they can attach. Not they can go home with you. And to constantly push them away. Now, I was having a conversation with someone last night, a few days ago, who said, all this white light nonsense, it means nothing. But I disagree. I think that light is our greatest protection. And there is a woman who I often have conversations with, who has taught yoga for almost 40 years, and she's quite powerful, and she says the same thing. Light is everything, and light is your greatest power to cleanse and to push anything away. But I was also as you were telling me about her story, it brought to mind how it does feel. Yes, you can feel them. They're heavy. The air is heavy. Literally, you can push through the air like it's a big jellyfish sometimes. The air is like soup. And sometimes you feel nauseous. You feel like a three-year-old in the backseat of a car. Or sometimes you feel prickly, like there's radiation on you, like you're under an old-fashioned sun lamp. So I understand. You can feel them there, and you can feel when they're not healthy and you need to get them away from you. There's a difference between spirits who are doing their own thing in their own consciousness and those that are glomming on to you.
Right, and Karen is agreeing with what you're saying. She's saying exactly that's how it feels. And what they used apparently were tuning forks and Arabic prayers. And
she says
the prayer, the prayer is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, La ilaha illallah is the prayer.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that is very interesting. Luckily, you know, you should have people with you when you're going to do these things, like Washali, who was the host of the whole show that she was doing. And Washali's very, she's a great woman. She's, you know, full of light and wisdom, and she can do this kind of thing. So that was good. But, yeah, so, you know, the whole... But Gail, don't you think that we're encountering ghosts all the time, wherever we go?
It's funny. No, I have to. I work in New York 3 days a week. And when I'm in New York City, I feel nothing. There are too many vibes. I mean, it's too energetically. There's too much going on. There's too much life. There's too many. It's when I leave and I go out into the country and I am in almost a theta state when I can feel them. I'm not saying that there aren't spirits in New York. I'm sure they're around every corner, but I can't feel them unless I am in that state. So I suppose I'm contradicting myself. They could be, I'm sure they are all around us, but I cannot perceive them myself unless I'm in the right state of mind.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you put that protection around yourself regardless. I mean, you know, you've learned to...
Half the time I forget. That's why I bump into them. I'm just not thinking about them. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, and you're... Yeah, I know, Gail, you're like, oh, you again? Please get out of my bathroom so I can go to the bathroom.
Here we go again.
Well, I'm also, I read in here that you were in a seance when you kept hearing the word, tell them Sam's here?
Oh, that was hilarious. It wasn't hilarious at the time, but in my, I think it was about 30 or so, I had just discovered the Spiritualist Church. I was living in Washington, D.C., and I had known nothing of mediumship or spiritualism before then. And I was fascinated, and it was my first... I've never gone through psychic development. I've just been too busy doing other things. But I thought, well, I'll go to a psychic development class just to see what this is all about. And basically it was a mediumship development class. And this was the first time I was ever there. And the woman, there was a grounding and protective prayer. And to put people into that state of mind, she was playing a tape of ocean waves rolling in and out, in and out. And she said, whatever comes to mind, speak. But, of course, you must ask permission before you can speak to someone and give them a message. And because I was very new and I knew no one, I was a little intimidated and I didn't want to speak up. And all of a sudden, I heard this gruff voice. He sounded like Walter Matthau in the right side of my head saying, tell him Sam's here. And I'm just going to ignore it. And tell him Sam's here. And Corrine, the guy, it kept going on and on for 5 minutes, and he was getting louder and louder and more insistent. And I was getting more and more nervous, and I was trying to say something, but the teacher was a little intimidating. I don't know what the problem was, but I finally blurted out after 5 minutes of this man hounding me. I looked at this young man with red hair, and I said, it's him. The voice wants him. And I just blurted out to this fellow, Sam's here. Sam's here. He says he's here. He wants you to know he's here. And the young man's face went ashen, and he said, my Uncle Sam, he died last week. And at that, the voice stopped. The guy stopped bugging me. So it gave me an inkling of how mediums hear. I mean, they're bugged sometimes, from what I understand.
Yeah, definitely. See, so did that ever happen to you after that?
I think it did. I think it did. I've had clairaudient experiences, but for a long time I was very shy about talking about them, because when you tell people you hear voices, they say, get thee to a pharmacy. But I have. Do you want to hear that little story about when I had first moved to New York?
Mm-hmm.
That was in my book. I had just moved to New York, every other night, I would run up Third Avenue after dinner to get in a quick swim at the pool, and I would literally run up Third before this pool closed. And one night I was running up, and I was looking into a store window and looking at the dresses, looking at my reflection in the mirror, and I heard this man's voice say into my head, turn around. And I thought, I'm too busy. And I made a point of ignoring it. And then the voice yelled, turn around. And it was so loud, I stopped in my tracks. I looked to my left, and there was this very pleasant-looking man just staring at me as though he knew me. And so I stopped, and we started talking, and basically he became terribly significant for 13 years.
That was a loud one.
That was a loud one.
That's pretty cool. Well, in the chat room, Intuitive Consultant says, yes, the spirits can be persistent. I can have them around for days until they get their messages across. And I just want to urge anyone, if you guys want to call in and ask Gail a question or tell us something about your experiences, please. The number is 818-369-0327. And again, we are talking to Gail Godfrey, author of The Paranormal Reader. A Paranormal Reader, I'm sorry. And you can find the book Merweed Press. And I put that in the chat room. I put the address to get the book. And really, it's just such a great read and just so entertaining. And Gail has such a warm, friendly voice, where you just feel like you're spending time with a friend and listening to her stories. So we're going to take a little tiny break here, about a minute, and we will be back. And again, if anyone wants to call, that would be fantastic. And we will give us 60 seconds. We'll be right back.
Visit purpleplates.com today. For over 40 years, the Purple Energy Plates have been delivering amazing results for their many customers. Inspired by the great genius Nikola Tesla, the harmony, healing, and energetic effects of the plates have proven over and over to be beneficial and often miraculous to thousands of customers. With their money-back guarantee and the many benefits, how can you afford not to get one? Check their site for daily specials and choose from their many energy products. You won't be sorry. Visit them today at purpleplates.com for mind, body, and spirit. And expect a miracle.
DelPadre.com. The website. DelPadre.com.
Hey, check it out. Take your website to a whole new level. Del Padre Visual Productions. Anything you can dream up, they'll make it.
What?
They're freaks.
Hi.
High impact. Flash website design. CD-ROM business cards. Come on, get your act together. And your website, DelPadre.com.
And we are back. You're listening to Supernatural Radio Show, and we are joined by Gail Godfrey, author of the new A Paranormal Reader. And Gail, you know, we've talked a little bit about your abilities and what you've shied away from because, you know, but I do believe that this is the right time for you to bring this out and perfect time for you to release this new book. Because we are, do you believe that we are changing, that the Earth's vibration is changing right now?
Well, a lot of people seem very unsettled in either they're very grounded and accepting and absorbing and retaining and processing all the information that we're speaking of now, or they're at a place where they're terribly unsettled and it is a difficult time, and I think that people's lives are intentionally being tossed up in the air to put them in an uncomfortable place, to make them start questioning and be starting to explore. And so I do see that a bit, yes.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, we have entered the age of Aquarius, and, I mean, it just, like you said, it seems like people's lives are being tossed up into the air, and there's lots of, confusion going on for people, and anxiety, and I just think that for some reason we have to go through this kind of thing right now in order to get to the other side. Gail, you know, we've both lost parents. You've lost both your parents. I lost my mom about 5 years ago. My dad, unfortunately, has Alzheimer's right now. And it's been quite the journey dealing with this. But what, excuse me, the listeners probably, you know, we've all lost loved ones. What would you say to people about the afterlife that might be useful to remember while we're here? Like, how would you, if someone was to say to you, what do I do? How do I come to terms with letting go? And how do I know that people really do go on? How would you answer that question?
Well, I always did from the time I was a child. I knew because of my training from my parents. So I was never bothered by death, but there are people who are unsure, and I know there are people who say to me, this afterlife business is nonsense. When we're dead, we're dead. Or people pine so much for someone who's passed on, but it's my strong belief, based upon my conversations with people who have passed on through mediums, that they're much happier where they are, unless they were so troubled that they have not passed over the bridge or made that crossing. There is that gray zone. But the thing that I discovered, and I discovered many things writing this book. I thought I knew it all. But the first thing I discovered, and this was about 5 years ago when I first got in touch with, it was longer than that, but I first got in touch with my father after he'd passed on. I foolishly thought that they suddenly became Mr. Rogers, that my father was a character. He was a little bit like Walter Matthau in the Sunshine Boys, but with an Italian personality. And I thought that he'd be Mr. Rogers because he was in that nice, warm, fuzzy place. Well, he came through And he was berating me just the way he did in life. Now, no medium is going to, who is faking, is going to do that. I mean, there are criticisms bandied about that mediums just guess. They just guess and throw things out. Well, your parents are going to come through with exactly the same personality that they had and the same characteristics and that they manifested that they showed when they were alive. And they're also not going to give you Pollyanna advice. I've gotten so many caustic words from my family who were well-meaning but sort of acid-tongued when they were alive, and they're still acid-tongued over there. And that's what surprised me. I thought they'd be warm and fuzzy. No dice.
No dice. Just because they're in heaven or or Summerland or however you want to term it doesn't mean they're going to be all light and fluffy, you know.
Exactly. That he'd be like Ward Cleaver, but again, I think very highly of spiritualist churches, and each of them, there aren't that many, and they always have a very seasoned minister or two at the podium who can do podium deliveries, and they're not costly, and they're effectively free, and they can be very, 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 very comforting. Now, of course, there's Lily Dale up in New York State, which is the spiritualist camp for the winter, and Casadega in Florida, which is the spiritualist church for the winter, and they're also places where you can get in touch with seasoned mediums.
Right. But you have encountered some pretty amazing mediums, and you point to them in your book. You met, what was her name, Bertoldi, or the Italian woman?
Concetta Bertoldi. Yes, she's very good. I think the most touching reading I ever got was one of the very first ones that I ever heard, and it's the leading story in my book, and you can actually read it for free on Amazon. It's in that, when you click into inside the book, it pops up as a sample, but I found it very touching. I was married at the time, and I was in my early 30s, and I was living in Washington, D.C., and my husband's parents were visiting from England. And he was spending the day with them on a Sunday, just the three of them, which is fine. And I thought, well, I'm going to go to this place I saw called the Spiritualist Church. I was intrigued. And I knew nothing of mediumship. I went in, and I sat at a pew, and these ladies and Lawrence Welk ball gowns. Now, mind you, this was in the early 80s, and they were in their 80s, so that's the way they wanted to dress. They were giving the messages, and they were terrific. And this one woman pointed to me, and she said, "May I come to you?" I said, "Sure." And she said, "Olive sends her greetings. Olive says that a very important anniversary has just passed." And I said, "Well, thank you," but it was a little disingenuous because I didn't know an Olive, and I didn't know anything about an anniversary. Well, that night I was having dinner with his parents. It was the four of us. And I was just babbling on about my day, and I told this story. Olive sends her greetings. Olive says that an important anniversary has just passed. And his father's face went ashen, and they put down their forks, and they suddenly went as still as could be and terribly quiet. And my husband was saying, "I don't know an Olive. That's a very odd name." Well, his mother finally looked up, and she said, "Darling, you do know that you're adopted." And he said, "Yes." And she said, well, we've never told you this, but your real mother's name was Olive. And she said, and it was, we're here to celebrate your 30th birthday. And your 30th birthday was 2 weeks ago. And we picked you up in the hospital when you were 2 weeks old. And Olive had cared for you for those 2 weeks. And I thought that was somewhat remarkable and very touching.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. We have a caller. I'm going to pick it up and see what we have here. We have 804. Are you with us?
Yes. Good evening. My name is...
Good evening. How are
my
you?
My name is Hugh. I'm calling from Virginia. I came across your show, and I have many, many bizarre synchronicities and experiences throughout my life, which include UFO, paranormal, and near death. I'm wondering if your guest researches in that area, or
yes,
I do, of course. Yes, I love UFO sightings. Talk about them. We'd love to hear about
them. Well, what I'd like to do, if I may, I've done it on other shows. There's an interview I did last month that has documents, and I'll mention a couple of things after I give the site, if I may. It's my name and a couple of words.
Sure.
It's Hugh, H-U-G-H. The last name is Trawlson, T like Tom, R-A-U-L-S-E-N like Nancy, and then after my name, just put the words Synchro, S-Y-N-C-H-R-O, Mystic, M-Y-S-T-I-C. It will bring you to the website. There's PDF files that are interesting, and links. There's a blog, one of the links, Creativity. 777.com, which actually has a copy of a letter from President Obama to me related to the economy, and a very powerful poem I dedicated to my wife. And her birthday would be, her anniversary of her passing would be tomorrow. I'm sorry, her birthday is tomorrow, and she would have been 67. And there's a picture of her on her wedding day on that blog. It's a very unusual picture. My profile is behind her, and the poem I dedicated to her is in the President Ronald Reagan Library. And she was a true earth angel for me. She blessed me with the lesson of unconditional love in the 35 and a half years of marriage that we had together. And in her memory, I'm working it into something huge that I'm bringing spirituality into global economics and combining it with unconditional love, making everything transparent, ethical, legal, moral, and forcing companies to be more responsible for their employees, their customers, the environment, and the community. And her name is throughout my entire life, even before I knew her, and I have other synchronicities along those lines that are quite bizarre. I mentioned that in the interview. I read a book back in the 80s before the internet. It was titled KGB, The Eyes of Russia. The author was Harry Rositzky, R-O-S-I-T-Z-K-E. I spoke with him actually after reading the book. He had retired from the CIA and had a gentleman's horse farm in Northern Virginia and was getting into studying spirituality, religion, and theology. I lost track of him over the years. In 2008, something prompted me to see if he might still be alive, and he had passed. And reading his obituary, four synchronicities jumped right out at me. His name was Harry. My father's name was Harry. His wife's name was Barbara Helen. My mother-in-law's name was Helen. His daughter's name was Anne Elizabeth Hunt. My wife's name is Anne Elizabeth. My mother's maiden name is Hunt. To have four synchronicities in one little obituary from somebody like that.
Yeah, synchronicity is like a fascinating subject. I'm going to put you on hold for a second here, because we have more callers and I want to get to them. So I'm going to put you on hold. And we have area code 252. Are you with us, 252?
Oh, yes, I was just listening.
Okay, sorry.
Hey.
Okay, and we have area code 701. Maybe they're just listening too, but let's see. Area code 701, are you there?
I'm just listening.
Oh, you're just listening, okay. I'm harassing the listeners. I'll put you back on hold, I'm sorry. So Hugh is talking about synchronicity, and I absolutely love when synchronicity happens. I'm sure, like, you know, reading your book, Gail, I mean, plenty of synchronicity has happened in your life, you know. But
well,
I think Jung is the expert on that, right? Carl Jung is the expert.
Yeah. I focus more on the collective consciousness aspect of Jung's work, which I found that it was, I tried to draw a correlation between that and, remember Seth, the Jane Roberts channeled books?
Yeah.
But Jane Roberts, Seth, gave very much the same message, is that our consciousness is not ours individually. It is part of a whole, a massive whole of we are all one person. And so I think that also ties in with, and I also mentioned in the book, remote viewing and mediumship. Where are they accessing this information? Where is this place? It is a place where our central mind, our collective mind, records all of our experiences and thoughts. And how we access that is part of technique, but whether it's meditative or getting into the theta state or using remote viewing techniques, which is an almost institutionalized form of psychic power, we're very much doing the same thing as accessing the collective unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm. And I just, Gail, I want to tell you about a little story that happened between, well, it happened, I wasn't friendly or friends, and I didn't know Karen Kay, the woman who was on the online earlier. We kind of communicated because she knew that I sold purple energy plates, and she knew the inventor in the 1970s. She would hang out at his house, and he had given her the plates back then. And so, you know, I talked to her on the phone maybe once or twice, and in my life, this happened just about 2 or 3 months ago. I would find, this is going to sound so strange, I would find crosses. I was coming out of the post office one day, and I looked down on the ground, and there was a gold cross with diamonds on it, and someone must have dropped it, and I picked it up, and then I was somewhere else, and I looked down, and there was a cross, and I put that in my purse, and then as I was going into my purse to show the two crosses to someone and tell them the story, there was another cross in my purse that was large and silver. It looked like it came from a rosary bead, and I had no idea where that cross came from. Never saw it before. So now there's three crosses. Meanwhile, at the same time, Karen in California, she's driving her car. And Karen, excuse me if I'm getting this story wrong, or not exactly right. She was driving. And she was on the highway. She stopped her car, and there was a cross on the hood of her car, not glued to the hood. It was loose. And it wasn't stuck in, you know, in any crevice or anything like that. So at the same time, she's finding this cross. I'm finding all these other crosses. Well, eventually, me and her have become very, very, very good friends. What do you make of that? Like, is that synchronicity, or what does that mean? Why did I find those crosses?
I wouldn't see that as just simple synchronicity. I mean, that was spirit manifesting, but you have to define spirit, and that's always the $64,000 question. Is it what we term the angelic realm? Is it the helpful dead? Is it your higher self? That was a communication. I mean, certainly you could put it under the category of simple synchronization, but they were alerting you. They were slapping you in the face, slapping you to wake up and notice this woman, and Karen, notice Corrine. And I don't have many synchronicities. I think that everybody's style of what's the word I want, of being communicated to by spirit is different. And in your case, and in Karen's case, it was synchronicities and manifestations of physical manifestations. In mine, it has always been hearing a voice, as has my mother and other people in my family. And so I think that these patterns tend to follow family lines. I don't know if synchronicities run in your family, but I think there are different groups of people who are attached by familial bonds that do have similar life patterns, but synchronicity really doesn't fall into my life pattern that often.
Right. I mean, yes, I certainly experience synchronicity a lot. I think for me, when I saw Karen's email about the cross, and I had my story to tell about the crosses at the same time, and that she knew the inventor of the purple energy plates that I had been selling for years. It was, you know, I just felt like it was meant to be, and it just felt really special and strange, and I just, like, it amazes me, because I was like, where did this cross come from in my purse, you know? And why would I keep finding these crosses? I don't know. It's strange. But she was driving, she says, and she stopped. When she stopped the car, she noticed the cross on the hood. It wasn't like she walked away and came back and the cross was there. It was just there. And
well, it's very
why did
rare,
it be-
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would
it's
it be
quite
on
something.
The car? It wasn't a magnet or anything. It was on the car loose. It was. It's strange. But anyway, so I don't know. Like, I would.
That was
like,
a sign that you were meant to follow similar paths and one of a higher calling. That's how I would interpret that. I think my favorite in the book, my favorite example of a manifestation of physicality was that photograph of the angelic figure over Nancy. And, I think we have a couple of minutes, but my cousin was going through a hard time, and she was photographed in front of a doorway. And when the digital image was, when she saw it in her camera, she said, look, there's some sort of fog over my head. And she was talking to a graphic artist who said, let me desaturate that. Let me just see if I can make that image pop. And what came through was the image of an angelic being. And she sent it to me, and I said, oh, Nancy, somebody, that's too perfect. That looks like the angel on top of a Christmas tree. Somebody superimposed that over your head. And she said, absolutely not. And I said, I don't believe you. Send me the original. And she sent me the original. And lo and behold, the same thing happened when I can't remember if I decreased or increased the saturation. An angelic figure pops out. And what I think is that whether it be your guide or your angel or your higher self, it will communicate to you and or manifest physically in the manner that has the most meaning for you at the time. So those crosses were sent to you and Karen because they knew that they would speak to you. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah. The figure that that Gail is talking about with the angel over Gail, her friend Gail in the picture, is an amazing photo. And she's got the enhanced color and the one before. And this is in Gail's book that we are discussing tonight, A Paranormal Reader by Gail Godfrey. It's got a great picture. And she's also got some other pictures in here of orbs and figures. Let me see. Yeah, two orbs. So what did
my orb hunting at the Edison Museum.
Yeah,
I tell people I orb hunt with my senses. I mean, I'll go in and surreptitiously shoot photos because that's ostensibly the what you're supposed to do. But I know very well there'll be nothing there. What I then do is say, okay, let me find an orb. And then what I do is just walk around, and the minute I feel someone staring at me who's not there, an invisible person staring at me, I say, ah, this is where I take a photo. I was in the Thomas Edison Museum, which had been shuttered after he died in 1931, and then just opened, and it's a perfectly preserved time capsule. And sure enough, outside the photography department was it looked like Glinda Goodwitch of the North at human level, and then I popped the camera in because I felt that there were presences in there, and one orb was sitting in the chair, and one orb was again at human height. So I prefer to wait until I feel that they're there and then take their picture.
Right, and that's pretty cool that you can feel that, you know.
I think anybody can if they put up their antenna. Just try it.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little afraid. I write horrific fiction and poetry, but then when it comes down to it, I'm like, ooh, I'm scared. Yeah.
It depends. The ones in the Edison Museum are perfectly nice. They're perfectly nice guys. Just they haven't left work yet. They're still there. But
right. You know why they haven't left work yet? Because Edison probably didn't pay them.
I don't know. I know they work 6 days a week.
I don't know how much you know about Edison, but he wasn't very fair. You know, Tesla did much work for him, and he didn't give him any credit. And he didn't pay him. He said it was an American joke when he said he was going to pay him, and he did some nasty things. But I'm joking that the workers are like still there waiting to get paid. But so do you want to tell us about any upcoming shows you might be doing?
Oh gosh, I think there's Mitchell and Mann's on Saturday night, and I have a list. they're eluding me right now. I think at the end of April I'm doing more book fairs. I'm taking a little hiatus in radio, and then I'll start again when it gets warmer. It's not easy, Corinne. I don't know how you do it week after week.
Yeah, it's a little difficult sometimes, but but I love to meet people like you, Gail. You know. And I love talking to people like you, so I appreciate it. Can they find that information on the Merweed Press site?
Yeah, they just, about the orb hunting?
Everything.
I do have a chapter list, but the book is available in print and in Kindle or Nook, in Mobi or EPUB. And it was a joy to write, and I was surprised at how many things I learned interviewing people, and also the cross referencing. We really didn't get into that much. For example, I saw a grainy patch, and someone else, it looked like a patch of floating cinders, and then someone else reported seeing it. And let's see, I had some other correlations. two people reported seeing ghostly figures with no face. The face was blurred, which and I had never heard of such things before I wrote the book, but there are just little nuances in there that I think can be informative for everyone.
Oh, definitely. It's such a great book, and I learned so much just from reading the book. But I mean, Gail, on the Merweed Press site, can they see your upcoming appearances and the book fair dates?
Well, they're in New Jersey. one is the Asbury Park Book Fair on April 20th, and the other is the Spirit Fest in Harrisburg on Sunday, April 28th, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So you would really need to be local to those sites. But I thought they'd be interesting, and so I'd rather do things a little personally for the time being.
Right, right. Well, I wish you lots of luck with that, and also I hope the book sell tons of copies, because it definitely is just such a joy to read. So I appreciate
Thank
that. We have about 4 minutes left. I'm going to see if Hugh has some last thoughts on this. Hugh, are you with us? Wait, no, hold on. I'm sorry. No, I guess not.
He was an interesting man. Well, it's the first night of Mad Men, so I'm sure that everybody is glued to that. But,
what is Mad Men?
Mad Men?
Mm-hmm.
It's a program about advertising executives, a series, and it's only about eight episodes long, and every year it pops up again, and it's truly terrific. But you can see it on AMC repeated during the week. So, it's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a television, so I don't really. I mean,
oh,
I'll watch.
Good for you.
Yeah, you know, I just like I have so much to do, Gail. It's like I can't. If I had a TV, I'd sit there and watch it all day, and I would get nothing done. So I'd like to listen to the radio and listen to interviews.
Well, these
and
podcasts are huge now, and they're so informative, and you can listen to them during the week if you don't have time to catch it while it's live. And I think that people are learning, this is the quickening. The internet is the quickening, and everybody, it's the explosion of information. And this is what's raising the consciousness of the world.
Yeah, yeah. We have in the chat room Curious Times. That's Chris, whose show I was on last night, and she was so wonderful to have me on and to talk about the plates, and I appreciate it, Chris. You are great. And intuitive consultant Karen, who's KKOK. We have psychic Yvette Scott. She's fantastic as a psychic. You should talk to her, Gail. She's phenomenal. And we have Boat Mom. And I appreciate all of you guys joining us tonight to talk to Gail. And I am going to say good night. And thanks once again, Gail. And keep in touch.
Thank you, Corrine.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And if I get up to New Jersey during one of those events, I'll certainly stop by and say hey.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Corrine.
Okay, have a good night, Gail.
Okay,
and
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you guys listening also, have a great night.
Have a great night.
And I will talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Living hell of another world.
Step out of the world you see.
You do not respond.
The Supernatural Radio Show. Open up your mind.
We programmed your brain.
The Supernatural Radio Show.
You must learn to obey.
Brought to you by PurplePlates.com for harmony, healing, and living energy products for a greater quality of life. The Supernatural Radio Show.